There it goes. I'm going to call to order the work session of the Newport Planning Commission at 6 o'clock on the dot. And if Sherry, if you're all ready to go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Derek. Oh, we got to do roll call. Sorry.
Yeah.
Roll call. John.
Here.
Harry?
Here.
Bob Berman's here. Braulio?
Here.
Bob?
Here.
Robert. And Bill Brannigan is at a medical thing, and I don't know about Jim. Okay. All right. With that, I assume the next thing on the agenda is staff report for City Center Revitalization.
Yes, thank you. Derek Tokos, Community Development. You had a chance to see some of this at your last work session, tried to give you a heads up, had a chance to, a little bit extra time to work through it. What you had in your packet here was a more refined version of what you saw previously, addressing some of the issues in there. This was presented to the Citizen Advisory Committee, which held their final meeting on May 16th. At the close of that meeting, the Citizen Advisory Committee made a recommendation that this be forwarded to the Planning Commission and City Council so that we can begin the formal adoption process. The Advisory Committee understood that the package that they were seeing at their final meeting was not going to be a final product, and that there were likely to be some changes with respect to the details as this gets moved into an adoption-ready format. What you have today is what we have is we've got Jim Hankey with David Evans and Associates. He's the a lead on the consulting team, and he's put together a PowerPoint presentation to kind of walk through the various components. This is an opportunity for you to flag issues that may be a concern to you or identify specific topic areas that you think need to be tweaked or adjusted. This is the time to do it. City Council will be holding a similar work session on June 2nd. And then coming out of that, the consulting team will put together a final draft of the plan that will be submitted probably late June to the city. And that'll be brought back to you at one more work session where you can take a look at it, and assuming it's looks like it's appropriate, we would then initiate the formal legislative process at that point in time, which would then lead to hearings through the summer and potential adoption, probably late August or September by the council. So that's kind of the schedule we have at this point.
Excuse me, Derek.
Yeah.
Sherry, I forgot to call Dustin's name. He is absent.
Okay.
Thank you.
And Dustin actually was our chair on the Citizen Advisory Committee, but he couldn't make the last meeting, and actually a couple of meetings. And so Jim Patrick is the vice chair, and he chaired the last meeting and is here to field any questions you have and share his own observations. So, Jim, you're up.
All right. Thank you, Derek. And thank you, Planning Commission, for having me here. Jim Hankey, the consultant team project manager. I'm from David Evans and Consultants, or in Associates, sorry, and representing the team of HerbsWorks and Eco Northwest and JLA are all the folks who are helping me with this project. So tonight, as Derek mentioned, this is kind of an update of where we are. We're not done. We've already caught a couple little errors that we need to clean up before we get to the finish line. So hope to provide an overview of some of the recent feedback, give you an update about what we've heard, and then kind of walk you through the code amendments that we are proposing, and then wrap up with a conversation around strategy about, okay, who's doing what here and what's the time frame. So that's kind of the basic agenda. And Derek, it sounded like maybe if we get about an hour in, we might take a break.
Oh, thank you, Jim. If my thought on this is if this should take however much time it is needed. It's a very important topic. And so we only have a final order for your regular agenda. So the thought is that if we hit 7 o'clock and we still I need to work through a few additional things to take a break, convene the regular session, adopt the final order per the schedule, and then go back into work session.
So just tried to give you a time frame and how we're organizing this evening. We'll talk about the outreach, and if you want to stop then and discuss, we can, or we can roll right into the plan and code amendments. Again, we can stop and talk about it and then move into the investment and incentive conversation. And should be plenty of time to talk about it all. So the project purpose, I think you've seen this before, land use policies, regulations, financial incentives to support reinvestment in Newport City Center, and then transportation solutions that complement those proposed land use policies, ideally promoting a mixed use development to create a live work environment where residents have convenient access to employment and essential services. As Derek mentioned, we're heading into the home stretch where we want to hold hearings over the summer. So just to kind of give you a sense of where we've been, we've done a bunch of outreach. We've started developing the policy basis, and you know, we've done a range of analysis, but we can see the finish line in sight should you agree we're heading in the right direction. So we began the project kind of summarizing all the goals of the city, looking at all the policy up to this point, and we came up with, looks like, five things you're interested in doing: an active mix of uses and a walkable environment, safe, efficient traffic flow and managed parking, clean, welcoming appearance, planned property development and acquisition, and targeted investment and infrastructure. So we're kind of done with most of the outreach. So what have we heard? We've done a variety of in-person engagement and online engagement. There was 80 attendees at an open house, 40 plus at a Spanish-speaking event. A bunch of folks filled out surveys. Thousands of postcards were mailed out to people. So pretty good coverage and good feedback. The online engagement has resulted in responses of 52 surveys in English, one in Spanish, and then there's been announcements on Facebook, Instagram, et cetera. So from the open house.
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
So in your experience, given the size of the town, is that a fairly regular type of response? Is it below average, above? What's your sense?
My sense is it's about typical. I don't think it's low. I think it's actually pretty good amount of feedback. You know, I've been involved in a few projects where they kind of surprisingly had a few like higher numbers, but everybody was a little surprised by that. And these numbers, I don't think this was about the expectation, I believe.
Okay. Thank you.
If you'd like to know more though, or I can kind of pass along the question to JLA as our engagement specialist. Quickly, you know, summarizing, what did we hear from the open house? There was two of them. People are, of course, very interested and have concerns about the impact of the couplets and increasing traffic on 9th. Implementation and funding, we heard a lot about. There wasn't much discussion about land use and development code issues, however, so a bit more of a focus and emphasis on transportation. At the Spanish-speaking event, the pedestrian issues showed up more strongly, although they were mentioned at the open houses as well. There was commentary about enhancing the visual appeal of City Center, potential for new business development, and ongoing support and preservation for the existing businesses. And then JLA did go out and canvass some of the 101 businesses, and they got some feedback about you know, concern around foot traffic impacts on businesses, you know, whether or not they would lose parking spaces, and how would things like service and access be provided, and would we have to close during construction? So really good feedback. I think it, you know, everything seems to align with this type of project about those are the right concerns, I think. So what was supported by all residents, storefront improvements and support during construction. Very important. Things like furnishings and trash receptacles showed up as a, you know, people are interested in seeing that type of enhancement. There's been conversation around alleys or other methods for accommodating delivery trucks and the access that businesses need. Breaking down big blocks with pedestrian connections through them. Mixing the residential on top of businesses was seen as desirable. And just general support on enhancing storefronts and keeping things pedestrian scaled with signage and other features. And then we've heard from the advisory committee and the citizens about a lot of interest in parks, you know, more and appropriate types of open space and park space in this intensifying and redeveloped city core. Written comments and surveys. Spanish respondents would like Highway 101 to look a little different than Highway 20. I think the character and function of those two corridors is a little different. So a little higher rate of response from Spanish folks versus the English speakers, that was less of an issue to them. Spanish respondents highly favored anti-displacement support compared to English respondents, but the Spanish speakers were also very interested in the passive and active parks in the area. I'm going to keep moving. There's a lot of details here. We can always come back. So I think this is kind of a repetition of what I've touched on. Alleys as delivery access, pedestrian scaled signage, a range of home types, breaking down the large size of the blocks, a mix of ownership and rental. And let's see. So that's, I think that gives a sense of what we've heard. A third of respondents wanted the highways to feel different. There was some comments from the online survey regarding asbestos and hazardous material cleanup. And then I believe we heard at the open house, you know, a lot of conversation around the farmers market, but it definitely showed up in the online surveys that there was interest in improvement and farmers market facilities. Regarding what we've shown so far about the proposals, you know, do they meet or somewhat meet the goals as stated? And 41% said yes, and 22% said somewhat. So fairly positive between those two groups about meet or somewhat meet. Most supported the goal of an active mix of uses in a walkable environment. And then goals had an even mix of yes, somewhat, or unsure regarding planned property development and targeted investment, which is fairly complex topic. So I think it's a little hard for most folks to wrap their head around what's involved in those types of actions. Building features. A lot of support for the alleyway delivery access. Again, it's a little bit repetitive here, just showing the numbers around how things were accounted for. So that's kind of a summary of what we've heard. And it came from open houses, online surveys, and kind of face-to-face meetings. So Derek, was there anything else you wanted to maybe highlight regarding the engagement so far that think I didn't
no,
cover?
No, not at this point. I had an opportunity to talk to the commission about it at their last work session as well, so I think we've covered it pretty well.
Can you clarify the difference between the graph and the numbers in the narrative to the left of the graph? Are they supposed to be showing two different things?
So, yes, the plan strongly meets the goal, 21%. Somewhat meets 16%. To be honest, I'm a little unclear myself. It's our other team member's graph.
Yeah, it seems so, like either the graph yeah. needs a footnote or something,
yeah.
or the numbers let me, need to just let me, maybe align that before your
exactly,
council
yep.
presentation.
Yeah, if I'm not perfectly clear, I understand that you aren't either. So I'll make a note about clarifying that.
And on all of these, it's not important, but you use colored bars, but there's no legend for what the colors mean. I don't think there needs to be in this case because the legends are at the base of each bar. But colors, when they're used like that, usually indicate some differences.
Yep. Okay.
John, I think if you're talking about the numbers and the bars, those appear to be just straight survey responses. The percentage is just the percentage calculation.
Oh, they're numerical rather than percent.
Correct.
Got it.
So okay. You got 21 of 49, I think.
So it just needs a little something in the legend to make that clear. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions, comments about the outreach information?
Braulio, did you want to, for asking some questions about the Spanish versus English?
I'm listening to your program, your presentation. Thank you.
Okay. Shall we move on?
Go for it.
Yes.
All right. We're going to enter into the code part of the presentation. And broadly speaking, we're organizing around recommending a city center design district and kind of following some of the precedents set by NYBEACH, but of course, adjusting it to fit city center. So that's kind of the big idea of, hey, how are we going to change or modify our rules? And that's kind of the big move is let's create this design district. Just a review, this is something we've presented to the advisory committee and others about. You had those five goals and kind of checking in on how are we doing about meeting these goals. Well, regarding the active mix of uses in a walkable environment, what you'll see in the following slides is we're trying to develop regulations and guidelines around infill and wider buffered sidewalks. So those are some of the key moves about that active walkable environment. The safe, efficient traffic flow, well, there's the couplet and kind of the simplified number of conflicts between vehicles and pedestrians is being reduced. The clean, welcoming appearance, there's opportunities for some gateway landscaping and streetscaping enhancements. And then a lot of what I'll show you in a moment about the code really relates to the character of the streetscape and how development engages with that. So you'll see that here in a minute. And then 4 and 5 is the last part of the presentation, and we have a lot of detail around what are the incentives and partnerships and strategy. So that's kind of just we wanted to be able to answer how is the plan addressing the five goals? And so that's a little sample. We have shown this illustration of a vibrant city center. And, you know, this is zoomed out pretty far, but it gives a little bit of a visual to what this could look like. But if you break that down into, okay, well, you know, tell me simply, what are you doing? Well, there's the central business district kind of south of Highway 20, but north of the hospital. And that's really the core of the focus and energy. And it's bookended by the Highway 21 corridor, the Highway 20 corridor, and that hospital node. And then I mentioned those gateways, which you see in the gold stars. And then on the north end of the Highway 101 corridor, there's the government center node. So this is just a diagram to show like the big idea. And then, so we kind of started with that, and then working with HerbsWorks, our partner on this project, they've been diving deep into your code. And you can see on the left-hand side of this slide the existing zoning map and our study area outlined in the heavy dashed black line. And we're not really proposing any zoning changes. We think the base zones are fine. What the advice is to go ahead and add some additional standards that help clarify some of the details about the base zone. So there's four major categories to those recommendations. There's some public realm standards, which is kind of the space between the streets. How is that treated? There's some general standards for development in the whole study area. There's gateway frontage types, and then there's some traditional downtown frontage types, which just kind of as a quick snapshot, what follows is organized around those four big ideas. So this gateway zone and on 20 and Highway 101, these are the areas sort of just to the north in the study area and to the south. And there's some landscaping that treatments that we're going to recommend, and as well as sort of some general standards that apply. And then, Bob, I don't know, I think it might have been you at the last meeting, you said, hey, what's happening at the 101-20 intersection? Because that's pretty important. So we clipped from the TSP the diagram that is shown in that document showing the two southbound left turn lanes, or the, I guess they're heading southbound, but they take you on to 20. Just to bring that in, because you said, hey, it'd be nice to have something visual. So the two gateway zones.
Jim, before we leave that, have you had a chance or would it be of value to talk to Angela a little bit about how important it is to pair the 101 improvements with that intersection improvement, or if it's perfectly fine to do them as separate projects? As from a transportation engineering perspective, it'd be nice to know kind of what her thoughts are.
I think we can develop the description more fully, because based on the comment saying, well, we're not seeing anything, to, okay, well, here's a reminder of what the TSP said, but Derek, your point of, well, is there some modifications or tweaks or moving from the TSP to the design district recommendations, is there, you know, how do the two work together or not? So,
well, I think the key for me, one is, you know, if this gets approved in some form, we're going to, you know, we'll get form-based codes in place. But in parallel, you know, we're going to begin to pursue the transportation solutions, and it would be helpful if there was some sense of maybe even some phasing guidance on how that's tackled, because my suspicion is we can't do it all at once. So, you know, if we're tackling 101, do we just focus on, you know, the area between basically the Armory and City Hall, or should we be trying to pair that with the US 101 and 20 intersection improvements? The US 20 itself, maybe that gets dealt with separately. I don't know. I mean, I think I have some thoughts, but it'd be from a transportation engineering and functionality perspective, maybe Angela has some perspective to share there.
I'm certain she will have some advice about how to go about it. Yeah, Robert.
Yeah, I just have a question.
the width of the lanes on the 101 in this proposed Highway 101 gateway zone, are they the same width as the 101 that continues from 20 and goes north? Are they consistently the same width?
Well, as you know, right now our study area ends just a few blocks to the north of Highway 20, and we've developed some kind of typical sections showing a change to the existing conditions in the study area. But as you move beyond our study area to the north, you know, of course, it'll stay the same. So there is a bit of a transition there. But my understanding is right in the heart, like by Herbert, the lanes are actually pretty narrow. They're like,
yeah, the lanes are variable width along the 101 alignment. The southern gateway by the hospital, I mean, that's your five lane alignment there. To your question, I don't know if the lane widths there match up with what's north of the intersection of 101 and 20. I know when you get all the way up there by Walmart now, it widens out quite a bit.
That's exactly what I'm...
You've got oversized lanes up there.
But you have recreational vehicles, you have commercial trucks, logging vehicles, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
You even have, like, fire trucks. You have all these different things that have extended widths. They're not the normal passenger car size. And I just keep looking at this and wondering, how's that going to work? If it's narrower than normal.
Well, we're already narrower than normal on 101 in the city center area. Those are 10-foot wide lanes. So the solutions here are going to widen out the lanes. They won't be as wide as what you see entering town from the north, but your vehicle traffic's moving much slower through there, and it's a much more congested. You would expect your lanes will be a little bit tighter in the core area versus coming in into town.
And another point, perhaps putting on my ODOT hat here, you know, being an ODOT facility, we have to meet their standards. And the good news is that they've created some flexibility about their standards when the highway passes through a town like yours. So as Derek pointed out, we'll be widening the 10-foot lanes right in the core to 11. But if they're 12-foot to the north, there's going to need to be a little transition, you know, through the area. So if it goes from 12 to 11, I believe that still meets the ODOT standard. And as you pointed out, trucks and things, you know, they need that width. But ODOT, I believe, has found that 11 is fine in this context, whereas if this were out in a rural area, they would want 12 feet. But in a more urban environment, the 11 works well.
Yeah, and that was run through the state. You know, the blueprint for urban design had a whole freight committee weigh in on that kind of stuff. So freight would weigh in on any design for a change to 101 or 20 in terms of the actual design that has to be routed through a freight review. So they'll have an opportunity to provide feedback for the larger vehicles.
Yes.
Looking at your street cross sections on the couplet, is there any, what is the rationale for having a different couplet southbound versus northbound? You know, my thought is there are a number of businesses along the northbound, and without parking, that's going to adversely impact them. And I noticed on the southbound, you're able to have the southbound traffic plus parking on both lanes, both sides. And I go back and, you know, conceptualize this. I think about what happens in Philomath and how the couplets are working there. And so I was just curious as to why the northbound couplet couldn't duplicate or be a duplicate original of the southbound couplet.
So the challenge facing us is that the 101 right-of-way is wider than the 9th Street right-of-way. Okay. So we just physically have less space to work with. And, you know, my understanding is we're trying to we're trying to balance, look at all the factors and create a balanced solution. And so with that constrained environment on 9th, the illustration shows you that we can fit two lanes northbound at the ODOT approved 11-foot each lane. And because they have a policy too for having a bike facility, you can see in the illustration we're showing that it's a buffered bike lane. But there really isn't room for on-street parking if you, again, you at a minimum, if we had to choose between a sidewalk and on-street parking, we're gonna, you know, a sidewalk is essential. So the illustration on the screen and maybe on your printout, you can see here on the bottom of the page, gives you a visual of what that looks like. We've talked with the committee and others about that street has a different character. There's kind of residences to the south or east of 9th.
Well, you're going to go past the hospital. Then there's the eye clinic. There's a dental clinic. At the armory. You've got the brew pub. You've got the, the restaurant that the lady has.
Yep.
I mean, there are some businesses there that would be impacted.
Yep.
Now the hospital would be south of where the couplet starts. So the hospital on
I delete my comment.
No, it's they're all fair comments. I just want to make sure kind of clear where it would be starting. It's going to swing in around by the armory. To Jim's point, you know, we've got 54 feet of right away generally on 9th. It varies a little bit in a few spots. We got 74 feet on 101. One area where where they did a fair amount of work to try to get some parking back is with the Festival Street concepts on the side streets on Alder and Lee, where we'd get some additional angled parking in there, and that's still proximate. We also still have the city lots on 9th and Herbert and the one right here at City Hall. So you've got some pretty good-sized public lots that are proximate to 9th as well.
Could you take the sidewalks and make them narrower to add a lane of parking on at least one side? I mean, because I'm looking at your illustration and, you know, you've got the lawn in front of the structures. Then you've got the sidewalk, you've got your bicycle lane.
Yeah. My understanding right now is that
some of the sidewalks are abutting the existing, you know, buildings.
Yeah. The 54 feet kind of is from the back of the sidewalk to the back of the sidewalk. So it's very constrained. What this illustration on the screen shows is if like a completely redeveloped 9th Street corridor were to happen.
Okay,
then
so your illustration is not consistent with what's actually on the ground on 9th Street.
Not today.
Okay.
Not today. This is more of a future fully redeveloped condition is what you're seeing. And if you for a moment said, well, let's not talk about the redevelopment illustrated, then that green strip on each side would not be there. All you would have is buildings potentially coming right up to the back of the sidewalk.
I think what Marcy and HerbsWorks conveyed to the Citizen Advisory Committee too was that that kind of separation is going to be essential on 9th to get the additional housing options in there and make them viable. So.
Yeah, very, very important for the residential uses where if somebody's living on the ground floor, then having a little bit of a landscaped setback makes it much more desirable than, you know, having your living room right at the sidewalk. So, but this, I want to bring your attention to this diagram, which I believe will get a bit of a update in the final version, but it shows how along the couplet, you know, this illustrates 101 and 9th, that we're trying to create these urban frontages. And what that means for a retail or commercial use is a little different than a residential use. And so you see like a dark purple and a light purple. And so the code, when somebody comes in with a redevelopment application for Derek, he can kind of say, well, look, we've got these frontage requirements. And if you're on a corner, we're trying to encourage retail generally, because that's a highly visible and sort of condition. But if you're mid-block, you know, you may allow retail to occur if somebody wants to do it, but we're going to presuppose a bit that the residential uses on the ground floor would likely occur more in the mid-block than on the corners. And then we heard a little bit of input from the advisory committee that as you move south of 9th on that frontage, it's likely to be much more residential than commercial. So I think there's a little bit of tweaking that we can make on this diagram to communicate that. That make sense, or is that confusing? More confusing.
Well, as this develops even farther, these maps will get more detailed. It'd be nice to be able to look at that.
Yep.
Outline exactly where the existing businesses are in relation to this map and exactly what's there.
Yeah. Well, that's a great comment, because what's there today and what happens in the future, there is like a transitional period. And we're trying to create the code advice about that future condition without, you know, disrupting existing businesses too much. Obviously, changing to a couplet, there's going to be some disruption,
it's
right?
There's going to be a lot of disruption.
Yeah.
But I think that would be helpful for even anybody looking at the map, especially anybody that's looking to do something with their business. If they look at the map and go, okay, well, here I am right here.
Yep.
This is exactly how I lay out with that couplet. It might be helpful.
Yeah. Understood. We're going to, Derek, you know, that was my understanding from the last advisory committee, was the south of 9th might treat it a little different than, you know, the core between 9th and 101. Obviously seem like much more commercial types of uses. Just north of 101, the commercial uses seem to make a lot of sense, but I thought I heard at the advisory committee, they're like, well, maybe going south of 9th with too much focus on commercial uses is a little going too far with that, because you can see how retail has changed in the recent past here too. I mean, there's a lot of vacant ground floor retail in every city in America. And so Marcy's advice, she was really kind of bringing up that allowing ground floor residential is not a bad thing, because it can be done very well, and there's always a strong demand for housing. So trying to create the right balance of not requiring that you do retail on every frontage, because some cities have done that, and I think it's led a bit to the current condition of too much ground floor retail. So we're trying to create a flexible thing where if somebody wants to do it, okay, it's possible to get there. But if somebody comes in and says, no, we just want to do 100% residential development, then that is okay too.
And Derek, to some degree, the state law as it is and probably will continue to morph would support that notion too, right? Of ground floor residential.
To a point, it does. I mean, we're just in a housing shortage right now.
Yeah.
That said, you know, our objective, though, too, is, you know, we're trying to get a little bit more housing in here because it's proximate to services. So we want there to still be services. And we don't want to displace businesses. And we have a lot of retail already in this area that we don't want to adversely impact, you know, from markets to restaurants. And so we want to make sure that that's accommodated as well.
Uh-oh. Made it. You all can remain seated, please.
Pope Francis.
Can I take us back a second to the 101 and the 20 intersection? If the warrants on traffic supported it for a double left westbound to southbound, Would that require some modification of the TSP, or is the TSP vague enough that that would be potentially an added item? I'm just thinking, if we really do widen that intersection, that's a once-in-a-generation opportunity, most likely. So let's get it right. And yeah. I suspect traffic might support double lefts in order to just improve the cycling on the signals and the throughput.
So you're saying a double left westbound on 20 onto southbound 101?
Correct.
Those that would have been looked at as part of the TSP. They did their forecasted volumes over the 20-year planning period, and they didn't recommend that.
Didn't meet warrants.
That I would have to assume that's the case, or it would have been something that was put on the table.
Okay.
Yeah, so the only solution that was clearly necessary is that southbound 101 to eastbound 20, which is already a queuing problem.
Right.
It is. Traffic through there is just...
I hear you, once in a generation when you touch it. But my suspicion is if we're getting that close to getting it done, I think we'll have them refresh the numbers.
Yeah.
See where we're at. Because you're right, you're going to get it done, and it's not going to be a 20-year on that one. It's going to be longer.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Well, should we keep... We'll keep moving. We can always come back. Just wanted to highlight this diagram. You know, it was the first attempt at trying to identify those key resident retail frontages, and you can see that it focuses on the corner locations in the city center, and it sort of implies the allowance of that ground floor residential use mid-block. So that's the intent, and again, I think we'll be modifying this slightly based on what happens south of 9th.
If that were to come to pass, the way you've got it laid out there, that would add a lot of residential in the downtown core, but we can no longer require off-street parking, and I'm sure developers would object to including off-street parking for the most part. Maybe not. I don't know. Jim could probably comment on that. But thoughts on what you do with it? Where do all those people park overnight?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's two Jims here, so I just want to make sure.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, the contractor Jim.
Oh, so.
Both. You're going to get both. Some guys are going to build apartments with no parking. A lot of them, their units is going to put parking in it. The tenants, because they're not going to be able to move the units. We're not Portland where that kind of stuff works, and even in Portland it doesn't work, because you go wandering around there, you see a lot of underground parking all over the place, because that's what they have to do in order to sell the unit. So you might not have to require it, but they're still going to put it in.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
And I've talked to a couple of mixed-use developers about this area, and they've both said that, you know, for the kind of the number of units they'd be looking to generate off of that, you'd be looking at a ground floor parking, and the grade separation between 101 and 9th is conducive to that, with that ground floor parking being accessed off 9th.
Mm.
But the other thing to keep in mind with this is this is heading towards this. If this is successful, we're looking at demand management. We're looking at paid parking, just like we have are going to be going down that path in Night Beach and have already done that in the Bayfront. I mean, it's just so what happens.
It'd be a good problem to have, I guess.
That'd be the good problem. If you have that kind of congestion, that means you've got a healthier environment there. Commercial, you know.
It's a good problem to have unless you live there. In Night Beach, I got to park sometimes 3 blocks from where I live.
Yeah, I think
I'll wait for the people to leave, and then I can go move.
The right concept by. Of housing without parking is, yeah. It's just a poor policy.
Well, you would have more things designed like the Night Beach situation where they have, I can't remember who the gentleman was that built that original residential with the first floor parking?
Well, you had Archway Place down there, which was Euster's project.
Don Euster.
Yeah, Don Euster's got the parking underneath the townhouses.
Yep.
So probably see not enough, that. And then they've got some up above too, I believe. Mm-hmm. So,
but don't they have underground parking at the Archway condos?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the underground, and then they've got some up above, I believe, too, off of
they
third.
Do.
Yeah,
right.
So you've got it at two different levels there.
I've got a question of older presentation versus this presentation for 9th. So to refresh my memory, I went back and looked at the visual that was done for the joint session we had with council for 9th. And that showed the 54 foot of right of way with a 4 foot buffer zone on either side and an 8 foot pedestrian zone.
Uh-huh.
And buildings on the PL with awnings.
It did, yes.
So was there a strategic shift between that presentation and what you just showed us, which
yeah,
is not the same?
The difference between, we had, David Evans generally focuses more of our work on transportation. And so when we cut those initial sections that you saw, it was kind of focusing primarily on the transportation issues between right-of-way line and right-of-way line. And then the development right at that, you know, zero setback was kind of reflective of the current condition. And then what you're seeing now is our partner on this work coming in with the advice about, well, let's make sure people understand that when it's a residential only ground floor, then this need for a green kind of buffering setback is important. So that's why you see it shown the way it is right now, because there's kind of the vision is illustrated of 100% residential on each side of 9th with that setback. So if, let's say you got to the corner though, and there was a coffee shop, then the code advice would say, allow them to come right up to the back. Okay. So that variation would be sort of allowed within the code advice about, well, if you do a commercial use on the ground floor, then a zero setback is a good thing. Let's keep moving through. Please speak up with any and all questions. Here's Highway 20, and this, you know, envisions similar lane widths as you have today. The change is really behind the curbs, and it's showing that buffer strip being enhanced with either some furnishings or paving treatments and potentially some landscaping. And then, as you can see, the parking lot on the right-hand side and that highlighted green strip, it's sort of trying to indicate again that how development or parking fronts the corridor, it'll be important to make sure it's treated in a effective way. So just another one of these street cross-sections. Derek mentioned, you know, you've got the cross streets of Herbert, Alder, and Lee right in city center. And Herbert is unique in that it's steep. It's very wide, but it's also steep as you head down from 101 towards the bayfront. So how it's treated is a little different than Lee and Alder. And what we're showing is that angled parking would allow for more parking to occur than parallel parking allows. So you could get more, you know, numbers of cars parked, which we think is a good thing. And then strategic locations, there could be a pocket where you have some landscaping just to kind of soften the urban environment, because this is envisioned as becoming a more intensely developed area over time. So here it is in 3D, kind of illustrating that condition, the very wide right-of-way with angled parking and some landscaping. And then Alder and Lee, the grade issues are less of an issue. It's much more flat. And so this is indicating that you could keep a lane, you know, east and west still open, but you could put some angled parking in the center, and you might do some pavers or something unique to give it a little bit of an aesthetic enhancement. And during the week, Lee and Alder, again, could provide additional parking than what you have today for the district businesses, which we all think is really important. But let's say you have a special event on a Saturday and you wanted to close the street. You could do that, and then where there's parking shown, maybe set up things like booths and vendors, and it would be a flexible space then that, you know, most of the week it's just a street with lots of parking, but then if you had a special event, it could be utilized in a different way. And I thought in the advisory committee meeting, there was a lot of interest in having Lee available for kind of overflow expansion from the farmer's market onto Lee. So I thought that was interesting. And then this in the red, CAC comments, there was so much enthusiasm. They were like, can we make sure there was power outlets? Because vendors really like to have that easy access to power. And then, again, kind of a drumbeat on make sure deliveries are accommodated no matter what you do. So that's definitely something we want to pay attention to. South of the couplet on 101, I forget who brought this issue up already, but again, it's that's where the couplet will go away, and it'll be much like it is today in terms of traffic flow. Two lanes heading south, two lanes heading north with a center turn lane. But our code recommendations, again, are going to make sure that the frontages achieve some of those aesthetic benefits of landscaping, if it's like a parking surface parking lot, or that any redevelopment create a positive relationship with the sidewalk.
Hey, Jim, on that, yep. On that note, I think one thing to keep in mind is there's an opportunity on the hospital side, at least, for abandoned road rights of way to be landscaped as properties redevelop. And the hospital's been doing a good job of that. We've been working with them on that. And that does a lot, I think, for just the aesthetic coming up through that area.
Yeah, and we started to illustrate that by the city hall. So maybe there's a way to illustrate that landscape opportunity south of the couplet. Okay. Since alleys has been kind of a topic, Marcy wanted to create some diagram, 3D illustrations of how, you know, alleys would look. So these aren't, you know, fleshed out in a ton of detail, but they do give you an idea of, you see this in a lot of cities. And again, there's some grade issues here in Newport, so it may not be possible on every block, but where it is possible, it could be one way to get access to the redevelopment. Looking ahead, this is the kind of visual standards that will be part of the final report, and it'll illustrate those setbacks and those height requirements in the different areas. I mentioned that your base zones of C1, C3, and P1 were not proposing to change, so this is just kind of in addition to the rules or modifications to the rules for those base zones.
Just quick question. How does it make any sense to say the minimum lot width is zero? That just...
Minimum width of...
B.
Yeah, B.
It just seems a little silly to say... I think... To say none, but to say zero is...
I think what... You know, this... I think that word could be changed to minimum... I think that's referring to the setback. So minimum width of the setback is zero.
Oh, Okay, well, that could be. Yeah.
No, that's minimum lot width. It could say zero. That's what, that, there's no minimum width requirement for the lot.
Okay, well.
Because your setbacks come into play under C.
Yeah, but if I submitted a development application for a 1 foot wide, 5,000 feet long.
You know what that ends up being oftentimes? Landscape strips. We have some of these odd undevelopable strips of land in some of these commercial areas.
All right, it's minor. Let it go.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm making a note of it because
you can just put the word none in there instead of zero. I think it might just right. Wouldn't grate on me as much.
And that's maximum lot coverage. Which you probably ought to put in there too, Jim.
Maximum lot coverage.
Under D, yeah.
All right. Well, these are good comments, and we want to make the final code, you know, work well for Derek and anyone else in the future. So
go back to that one. We have to do some thinking about that. That means basically those are 50 by 100 foot lots, fourplex.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're trying to do over retail residential and you want to be efficient about it, you're going to need to do something bigger than a fourplex. Luxury units that are going to be big.
So, Jim, you think in some of the areas might warrant higher density allowance than what that would allow?
If it's over retail and make it viable for somebody to do something, I can't see them doing something where they're on the
retail. That's fair. No, that's a good point, Jim. But where we're talking middle housing, once we get like a block or so or two away, and now you're talking more townhouses, plexes.
You're talking the regular density, I think, once you get back. You can even make it that same density on the south side of 9. I'm just saying over that core stuff.
Got it.
Trying to flip that over the retail, that's where you want to give them some allowances to do something higher than that. Because it just...
That's a good point.
All right, Derek, we can talk to Marcy about...
I think it's a good discussion point with Marcy.
In.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, that's one where you could almost do the same thing as the minimum width. You could just not have a required land area at certain core points. I mean, it's something I did in San Francisco as part of the Octavia rebuild. So I had 50 foot by 10 foot amazingly small lots that had to go, you know, vertical big time. And when you looked at the land area per, it was ridiculously small. So it's a thought. Just totally relax that requirement.
Yeah, no, it's a good time.
Oh, no, we were going to go to the regular meeting at 7 and then come back.
Okay.
And Sherry... Change it back.
Well, there's nobody here, though.
Hmm? Well, it's just the way we decided we were going to do it.
Oh, okay.
Anything else on the chart that you wanted to cover, Jim?
No. I mean, it gives you a sense of the kinds of regulations we're looking at and making. We're going to make a recommendation about what these design development standards, you know, will be. So I appreciate the feedback, and I have to say Marcy's our expert on this, so I'll try to answer any questions as best I can, but I'll be bringing the hardest ones to her.
I just want to give you guys a heads up too, that I've already, the area where we might start seeing more of the housing redevelopment is probably going to be off about a block north of 20 off of Northeast First. I've had calls on a few properties already where people are looking at the opportunity of being able to do some additional residential density there between the high school.
First, you say?
Off US, Northeast First, off about a block north of 20. So while we've spent a lot of time talking about 101, we ought not look lose sight of 20, because I do suspect that's where we have a number of housing redevelopment opportunities, probably more so near term than parts of 101, where we really do need to get the transportation solution in.
Yeah. Yep.
At 7 o'clock.
Okay. The work session.